Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of February 22nd. This week we feature an interview with Kathy Saley, Director of Domestic Social Development for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Kevin Clark interviewed Ms. Saley down at the Social Ministry Gathering in Washington, D.C. this week. Kathy has been very involved with the bishops' efforts to negotiate on healthcare reform and to make sure the Catholic voice is heard in the debate. Kevin Clark is an associate editor here at America.
All right, Kathy, we're a couple of weeks after the election of Scott Brown in Massachusetts and the turmoil that generated around the healthcare reform package. What's your best guesstimate on the status of the healthcare reform bill right now? Is it DOA or chance of being revived?
My hope, because I'm a hopeful person, I have it at 50-50. I think that a lot of progress has been made. There is a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that have already gone into this and political capital. So it just seems to me, just observing kind of the politics of this, that they're going to have to do something. So, but the question, million-dollar question, is what is that something? When would it happen, and how will it happen?
The meeting that the president is planning to conduct on February 25th with Republicans and Democrats to sort of hash out everyone's expectations or objections to the bill, does that suggest we're starting all over again?
I don't know. It's been interesting. Even the congressional leadership in both the House and Senate and on both sides of the aisle have been confused about exactly where the administration is trying to lead or if they are leading in the process. It could be that they just want to put everything out there and see if there's something that they could add to what's in existence and make it palatable, or just delete a couple things and make it palatable. But I think it should be encouraged that they're trying to sit down and do something bipartisan, and particularly that it's in a public setting. The bishops have certainly been very clear in their last letter to Congress in January that this still remains a national priority and a moral imperative. And the best way to do this would be for people to sit down and start talking. So it seems like a great first step, but exactly, again, what that second step is, I'm not too sure. I mean, it may also depend how far apart they really are when they sit down.
Do you think anyone has the, the stamina or the interest to start this all over again at square one?
I think starting over would be a death knell. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I'd be happy to be proven wrong, but I just don't imagine, I can't imagine how starting over really gets us. I mean, there aren't a lot of options out there. I mean, we have certain plans, policies that are in existence in different states. People have done some experimentation. Healthcare policy experts, they have this kind of finite, you know, menu of options to choose from. They've put together this bill. Things are interrelated, so it's very difficult to do things piecemeal because they're all kind of building blocks on one another, or dominoes falling if they don't keep them together. And so I don't know if they were to start over that they would really end up in a very different place.
So I guess then the idea that is also being floated, well, let's tackle this bit by bit, sort of Bill Murray style, baby steps. That's not something you're too fond of either.
Well, I just am not sure how it would play out. So if you were to kind of pick off the low-hanging fruit and do the insurance reforms, like prohibiting companies from denying people based on pre-existing conditions, imposing lifetime caps, getting rid of those lifetime caps, and doing those things to which there is great consensus for, that would be fine. You could get something passed, but then what you would do is limit the risk pool to basically people who are already ill, to people who have chronic conditions, because those who are healthy would say, well, if I'm going to be able to buy health insurance when I get sick, I'll just save my money and wait to buy until then. So you would actually drive up costs dramatically for people who were to have the insurance. So the way to fix that is to have an individual mandate. So you say everybody in the pool. Everybody has to get in there, so we really have a commitment to the common good, if you will, and everybody's in this together, and we disperse the costs among everybody. So that should lower costs. That should make it more affordable for people, but it won't be affordable for everyone, so you're going to have to offer subsidies to people. You're going to have to broaden the eligibility into some of the existing federal programs, such as Medicaid. So if you were to do the insurance reforms, have a mandate, and then create a financing system that allowed everyone to get help who needed it, you basically have the bills that are in, that are out there.
And that brings us right back to another question a lot of people are having, and I've struggled with this myself, looking at the Stupak Amendment, talking about the subsidies in the insurance pools that are being proposed, exchanges that are being proposed. Stupak versus Nelson Casey, can you give us a very simple explanation of the differences and why the USCCB likes Stupak, doesn't like Nelson? And one follow-up, if the USCCB does not get the language they want on Nelson Casey versus Stupak, what happens then? Do they withdraw completely their support for the health care reform measures?
Well, the Stupak Amendment, the way that would work is it maintains the current federal prohibitions against federal funding of direct federal funding of abortion or funding of plans that cover abortion. The Nelson Compromise language and that's currently in the Senate bill does not maintain that. It does keep the direct funding of abortion in place, the prohibition on that in place. However, the subsidies that would be offered could still end up going to plans that cover abortion. And if someone purchased a plan in the exchange with the subsidy but still had abortion coverage in it, and they might pick that plan not because it has abortion coverage in it, but because their doctors are in the network or it offers coverage for other things that their family needs, they would be required to use their own money to pay for the abortion coverage and to violate what has been a national consensus that we will not force anybody to pay for other people's abortions. And that becomes then really a personal moral dilemma as well as a violation of the current law. So those are the big differences. Now, what exactly got worked out on abortion language in the very end, without knowing what it is, I can't say whether or not, you know, if there's another way to get to keeping the current laws in place, and it's not exactly like Stupak, but it does the same thing, then that would be fine. We just haven't figured out what that route is yet. I think the bishops will always remain committed because they have for decades. We keep joking in the office that we're looking for the letter that the bishops wrote to Harry Truman supporting health care reform. So I think in concept, the bishops will always stay committed to the need for health care reform. As to specific pieces of legislation, that will depend on what's specifically in the legislation.
If you could give 5 bullet points for every Catholic citizen, taxpayer, voter to try to remember about the health care reform proposal, the proposal you'd like to see in Washington, you know, it's a very confusing time out there. We're hearing a lot of messages about health care and why people perhaps shouldn't be supporting health care the way the U.S. Catholic bishops are. What might those 5 bullet points be?
Health care reform is a national priority and a moral imperative, so we must keep at this. It should provide health care for all, and that's the simple definition of all. All means everybody from the moment of conception until natural death. It should maintain the current prohibitions on federal funding for abortion and maintain the conscience protections of health care providers, including employers who offer health care insurance and doctors and hospital staff and everyone else involved with the health care system. And then immigrants should make sure to be protected. They still need to be able to have access to health care, and we shouldn't be putting up more barriers to health care. We should be taking those barriers down. So
that's legal immigrants or undocumented migrants? How does the USCCB hash that out?
Well, they looked at this and said that, I mean, the official position of the Catholic Bishops' Conference is that health care is a basic human right and everyone's entitled to access to health care. Then there are political realities of what can actually be passed in health care. We need to remove the barriers that are there for legal immigrants in accessing Medicaid, for example. There's the 5-year bar prohibiting legal immigrants from being eligible for Medicaid for the first 5 years they reside in the country. That should be removed. I don't see any way to get to a bill that would provide subsidies to undocumented immigrants or access to federal health care programs to undocumented immigrants for health care. However, they should definitely be able to buy health care coverage with their own money. They should still be able to access employer-based plans, which many of them have now. And they should not be turned away from an emergency room or from a doctor's office or from a health clinic just because they don't have documentation.
Okay, final quick question. The Canadian health care plan, which was gets revised every so often, I think the last one was 2001, is exactly 14 pages long in both English and French. Why is our health care proposal somewhere in excess of 2,500 pages, I believe, now? Why can't we do it the way the French do it? The French-Canadians and English-speaking Canadians.
Actually, I have not read the Canadian legislation, so I really can't comment on that. But if there's a 14-page bill out there, I sure would like to see it.
All right, I'll email it to you.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you, Kathy.
Okay, thanks, Kevin.
Thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. And thank you to Kathy Saley and Kevin Clark, who again spoke down at the Social Ministry Gathering in Washington, D.C. Check online this week for a video interview with Marianne Cusimano-Love, a columnist for America. Kevin Clark spoke to her also down at that conference. A reminder that you can respond to our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.